This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a five-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-Hour Energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
Take me out to the ball game.
What are you doing?
Did you know DirecTV has the most MLB games?
So you're singing.
Yeah, they put your favorite teams front and center right when you turn it on. Buy me some cold cuts and flapjacks.
Those aren't even the words.
I'm allergic to peanuts.
Stream DirecTV, home of the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks. RSNs available with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package.
Sports betting is alive and well, especially online sports betting in the state of Louisiana, and that provides a lot of money for a lot of different projects in the state. And it seems as though when we have a local team that makes it into the playoffs or otherwise, or College World Series, or like we have right now with March Madness, the amount of the handle goes up. And here to talk to us about that is Kirk Talbot, state senator from Jefferson Parish. Kirk, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Newell. Thanks for having me.
Kirk, these numbers are huge increases. Talk to us about it.
The numbers look really good. I think they're exceeding everybody's expectations. And, it seems to be on a great track.
Now, the way this works is that we are one of, six or seven states in the country that allow online sports betting, and then you have casino sports betting, and the state kind of reports these numbers out separately, and it looks like online is a big, big, big group of folks.
Yeah, no surprise there. I mean, so 38 states have some form of sports betting. I think you're right. I think it's about less than 10 have the online. Some have the where you walk in person and you, like if you're a Caesars, you walk up to the counter and place your bet. But, you know, no surprise that the online component of that is really showing some big time numbers.
Yeah. And these dollars actually, the taxes that are paid go to the state, and some of that, I think 25%, if my memory serves me correct, goes to early childhood development, right?
That's correct.
And have we been able to assess what outcomes we've been able to achieve as a result of that additional funding?
I don't know if those reports or numbers are out yet. But everything that we've been told is that it has been very positive. But I don't know if I could, you know, if they have specifically laid out numbers yet to show that, you know, the benefits of what that's being done with that money. But they're happy, you know, the people that are implementing these programs and they are, they're doing a great job and it seems to be working very well.
There was a lot of initial concerns about the implementation of this. It seems to really have gone without a hitch.
It has. And, you know, we learned when this whole thing started, we didn't rush it. We didn't jump in without knowing what we were doing. We looked at what other states were doing, because there were other examples out there, and we took the good from the bad. We brought in people from out of state. We really looked at this as much as we could with as much detail. And I think it's gone off very smoothly. We haven't had to add legislation to fix unintended consequences, or, you know, do things that undo things, or do things we forgot to do. It really has gone off without a hitch, and it's been a smooth transition. And people, I go to some of these conferences where they invite legislators that sit on gambling committees like I do, and they constantly praise Louisiana, like, y'all did it right, y'all are doing it right, and stay on that track.
No big surprise when one of our homegrown teams are doing well that the handle goes up, right?
Right, exactly.
And I got to imagine, you know, with the ladies still in, they're in the Sweet 16. Unfortunately, the men didn't get there, didn't make it there.
Right.
But I guess we expect that there's going to be a lot of betting on that, too.
I think so. I think you're going to see with, you know, the Sweet 16, and then, you know, with the Elite Eight and the Final Four on the men and women's, regardless of whether we have a men's team. And that, I think you're going to see a big jump in betting for sports betting.
Absolutely. It's good to hear that, you know, that people are holding us up as the gold standard. And I know there were a lot of detractors to this, and I know that the work that you put in, as well as, whose name just escaped me, the former chairman of the Gaming Commission, Ronnie Johns.
Yes.
Almost had a senior. It was an almost senior moment.
No, you're right.
But Ronnie Johns doing it, you know, and the rest of the committee doing a great amount of work, and you know, it wasn't easy because there were a lot of detractors.
That's right. And look, our gambling and control board is very professional. We have the right people on there. They're doing it for the right reasons. It's a very open and transparent process. And Ronnie Johns really deserves a lot of credit for having this launch and maintain the way it has been. But we replaced him with some good leadership as well. And the Gaming Control Board has done a great job, and they continue to do a great job.
Absolutely. Let's pivot for a second, Kirk, if you don't mind. Are we hearing anything about what the possible turnout may be for this constitutional amendment election statewide?
Well, all we really have is the early vote numbers, where they've been really strong turnout in the black community. I think it was at 37%. I think with the weather, I think we're going to have some really bad weather on Saturday, so that always depresses voter turnout. I think with these special elections like this, Newell, it's just really hard to tell. I think the early voting numbers surprised everyone in where those numbers came in. I think Republican turnout was not as high, I think, as we wanted. So as a Republican, you know, we need to get some of that vote up. But, you know, a lot was going on during that early voting period, a lot of festivals, a lot of things like that. So hopefully, look, either way, however, you know, I'm voting for all four of them. However, the people vote, we want the turnout to be high. We want it to be good. We want people to take time and to be a part of the process. So I would just urge your listeners to please vote.
Typically, it wouldn't be. Someone quoted a number of 18%. To me, that seemed to be really high. But
I think that's accurate. And those numbers are on Nancy Landry, the Secretary of State's website. You might have to do some of the math on your own to figure out what demographics are doing what. But it was high. It was high. And hopefully we can maintain that again. I know we're going to have some severe weather possibilities on Saturday, which is always a problem. So hopefully it won't be that severe, and hopefully we can keep those numbers going pretty strong.
Yeah. We'll take a wait and see, but like you, I encourage people to read about the amendments, get out there and vote, figure out where you are on these, and don't just, not go to the polls. I mean, I think it's important that we exercise our right to vote. These are important issues. It doesn't matter what side of the, you know, if you're yay or nay, it doesn't matter. They're important issues, and if you want to be have a voice in determining the future of this state, you need to go vote.
That's very true. And look, just because you may not like one amendment, don't vote against all of them. I mean, you know, the four yeah. amendments are very different. You know, it's not the same subject matter. So, you know, people might have a problem with one particular amendment. Don't just vote against all of them. Please read them individually and judge them on their own merits, because there are some really, in my opinion, very good amendments that set us on a really good path, especially number two, you know, with our tax situation. But you know, please read them and take the time to figure out what they do.
I was surprised because I didn't ever hear this. I mean, I know that amendment number two is probably received the most press and most talked about of the four amendments, and obviously because it's about money, right? It's a fiscal issue. The governor up in Shreveport said if it didn't pass that these stipends more likely than not were going to go away. I'd never heard that before. Were you kind of surprised by that?
I did not hear that, but I don't know if they would go away. I mean, you know, we have a session starting April 14th. And, you know, we can certainly...
Because you guys have say-so in that, right? I mean, that's something that y'all decide.
We do, but what number two does is put it, is make it permanent. And that's what we'd like to do, right, is to make that stipend permanent. So that, you know, yes, it does. It is subject to the will of the legislature, and it is subject to, you know, the ebbs and flows of revenue coming into the state treasury. It would be, I mean, if I was a teacher, I would want it. I would want that to be permanent. They deserve it. Wish we could do more, but I would, you know, that's why if I was a teacher, I would absolutely support number two. And, you know, it just makes good fiscal sense. And the other things that amendment does make really good financial and fiscal sense for the state of Louisiana.
Yeah, no matter what you believe, get out and vote. And I think you great observation on your part. Don't just, you know, all yay, all nay. Look at these individually. They're very different
in
their nature.
They're all four very different.
You know, they're not anywhere close to being in the same sphere.
Take the time to
read them. They're very short. And in fact, that's one of the complaints about amendment number two. But be that as it may, it's not going to take you five minutes to read through the amendments.
Right. I think it's 91 words, but, you know, you kind of damned if you do, damned if you don't. If you make it too long, people get tired of it halfway through and they just, you know, vote no on what you don't, you know, if you don't understand it. So you don't want to make it too long to where people just don't want to read the whole thing. So obviously you want to be able to express what it does, because it's a big deal. So, you know, we kind of met in the middle, and I think it's good language, and hopefully people will take the time to read the whole thing.
Yeah, you know, I think my biggest criticism is, and I have this of Congress, too. We don't see this that often in the state legislature, because y'all have different set of rules of these multiple issues being wrapped up in one congressional action, you know, that don't have much to do with one another, and they're not really germane.
Right.
Although they rule that they are. It's like, yeah, and what universe is that? Is that issue A germane to issue B?
Yeah. Right. You know, on state level, as you know, our bills have to be germane. They have to be of the same subject matter. When you see bills in Congress, it's like, well, we have a funding bill to fund, you know, I remember during the Iraq War, they were passing bills to fund the Iraq War, and they had abortion things tied to that, or they had something that had nothing to do with that. And I don't know, that to me, that is a completely moronic way to handle legislation. I don't know how, you know, I don't know why in the world they do that. We would never do that here. And it seems like they just put poison pills to, I don't know how they pass anything like that.
Now, it truly drives most people crazy. And we've never been able to affect the change up there, because it gives everybody an out. If it's a bill that's problematic for them back home, they can pick one little, you know, poison pill that's in there and say, I can't vote for that, you know, or I can't vote for this. and then we don't get much of anywhere. But thank you so much for joining us today and filling us in on where we are on online betting, because we are different. They're not like us on this. There are very few that are. And we seem to have achieved the gold standard, which is a good thing. Senator Kirk Talbot, thank you so much for your time, your insight.
Thank you, Neil.
Have a great weekend. All right, we'll be right back, folks. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with us.
Hey, it's Jim Costa with Cash the Ticket. It's March, so Mike Valeni and I are all over the tournament again this year. There's just nothing like betting in March. Breakdowns of every region and every game. From conference tournaments to the Final Horn, we'll have the picks and the plays on every single game. Cinderella spotlights, upset alerts, and some of that value for the last team standing. It's tourney time, so hunker down and bet the board with us. Subscribe and listen to Cash the Ticket in the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, folks. There's a lot of talk at the national level about dismantling the Department of Education. In fact, President Trump has instructed the Secretary to the Department of Education to begin that dismantling process. He is of the mindset that it's going to require congressional action in order to eliminate the Department of Education. And there's a lot of discussion about how much they actually provide. Nationally, about 13.6% of total funding for public, elementary, and secondary schools in the year 2022 was the most recent data that I could find. It comes from the federal government, federal funding, and that includes some non-education department programs such as school breakfasts and lunches that's actually managed by the Department of Agriculture. That goes there as well. The school systems that rely most on federal K through 12 aid, Mississippi, the largest, South Dakota, number two, Montana, number three, Alaska, number four, Arkansas, number five, North Carolina, number six, Kentucky, number seven, Arizona, number eight, Oklahoma, number nine, and Tennessee, number 10, at 19% of their funding. Louisiana, I believe, is a little lower. And here to talk to us about that is Dr. Cade Brumley, the superintendent of education for Louisiana. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Newell. Thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure to be on with you.
Thank you, sir. Your angst and anxiety level of this dismantling of DOE.
Yeah, I mean, it's very low for me. I mean, I have tended to believe that the more so that we can push education down to the states, that's a good call. You know, I'm confident in state leadership. I'm confident in teachers and local leaders working with moms and dads to make good decisions. And, you know, taking out the middleman in many ways seems to be a good approach. I would also remind the audience that, you know, even if the Department of Education did not exist, laws that are important to all of us, such as taking care of students with disabilities or, you know, anti-discriminatory practices across the board, those laws remain in place. So it's not as if you would have a situation where you would no longer tend to students with disabilities and their needs, or, you know, you would move to discriminatory practices, or you would no longer have, you know, a requirement to share with the public school outcomes. Those things would still remain in place. You just wouldn't per se have the department. But as you mentioned earlier, I think even Linda McMahon, who is President Trump's Secretary of Education, has commented that, you know, to officially do that would take congressional action. And you need to get across that 60-vote margin in the Senate. And I think right now Republicans are not close to that 60. So I think instead of, you know, fully ending the department, so to speak, through congressional action, what the president is doing and working with Secretary McMahon is they're looking at ways they can dismantle that department, shift functions to other federal agencies, and push opportunities down to the states. And I think, you know, we welcome that. I know Governor Landry welcomes that. So that's kind of where we are at this point, Newell.
Opponents to this, they're making some really crazy accusations, in my view, and I just want to ask you about it. The National Education Association president, Becky Pringle, says that Gutting the Department of Education will hurt all students by sending class sizes soaring. How do we connect that dot?
Well, these are the, I mean, whether one agrees with the idea of dismantling or abolishing the federal Department of Education or not, I mean, that's just theater. That's theater from the teachers union that is not serving the public well in terms of making informed decisions or having an informed opinion. Whenever we talk about funding, I have heard of no conversation that speaks in any particular way about a reduction in funding into the states from federal dollars. There have been discussions around, instead of having these funds tied to specific endeavors of the present federal administration, they would be block granted down to the states so that the states could make decisions on the best way to use those dollars. But I have not heard a single conversation relative to reduced funding for the states, or certainly increasing class sizes. And as a matter of fact, in the state of Louisiana, we have policy at the state level that caps class sizes. So class sizes can only be within a certain range based on the grade level of the child. So we would even have to change Louisiana policy if we were going to lift class sizes. So I think that that's just a scare tactic being used by the National Teachers Union, which I don't think is helpful for a thoughtful discussion around this opportunity.
No, not at all, because they go on to say that this gutting process will gut and eliminate students' civil rights protections. I mean, that's a far-reaching statement, right, to the complete administration of local school boards, local school administrators, principals, yourself, and others, as though y'all are not capable of handling civil rights complaints within your educational infrastructure.
Yeah, it's just completely absurd, and I think it speaks to the mindset of elitists who believe that you need Big Brother to tell local communities and teachers and moms and dads what to do. I have full faith in the leadership of our state. You know, we have a governor that's been supportive of our educational endeavors. We have a state legislature right now that's been supportive of those things. We have a state board of education, likewise, that's aligned. And of course, my agency at the Louisiana Department of Education, we're working with local and otherwise leaders around trying to make good progress. In fact, you know, there's not a state in the country that has been more rapidly improving for ed outcomes than the state of Louisiana. We are the story. So to even consider some of this nonsense and these fear tactics, again, I am more than welcome, Newell, and I think people appreciate that I'm willing to have conversations around pros and cons of issues, looking at data and fact, but scare tactics such as that just aren't helpful.
No, because, I spent a good portion last night doing my research, right, and it turns out that you take federal money. The federal money, as you well know, better than any, it comes with strings, right? It comes with rules, just to list a few. You take federal money, you got to abide by federal discrimination regulations, federal lobbying regulations, federal regulations regarding promoting objectivity in research, federal regulations regarding research misconduct, Title VI of the Civil Rights Act, Title IX of the Education Amendments, Section 504 of the Rehabilitation Act, the National Occupational Safety and Health Act, FDA, drug-free workplace, smoke-free workplace. And under the Obama administration and Biden administration, they put in a whole sexual assault process attached to this federal money, trans student protections, DEI policies, ESG policies. None of that ultimately ends up going away because it's all linked to the federal money, right?
Yeah, and it's at the whim of the administration that national level. And you know, I've had conversations again with the highest level of leadership in the country on this issue. And as I've shared with them, you know, if you are going to be an administration that chooses states' rights in terms of an education, you have to accept states' rights in California in the same way in which you accept state rights in Texas. And those are, you know, those are going to look a little different in the values of those individual states. But if you believe that education is a state's right issue, then that's what it is. And whether you're in Washington State or Florida, they're going to make those decisions in the best interest of their communities. But let me give you a very clear example that I think your audience can relate to, Newell, is, you know, a couple of years ago, this act passed called the Bipartisan Safer Communities Act. And as a part of that act, we, as the state of Louisiana, the Department of Education, we received just north of $20 million for school safety. And so we made the decision in our state to take that $20+ million, provide $500,000 grants, $500,000 grants to 40-ish school systems across the state for various projects relative to hardening their school perimeters. So making sure that they had locking systems that worked on their doors, making sure if they needed a gate somewhere, they could have that, making sure that if they need fencing, they could have that. If they needed single point of entry construction, they could do that. Well, these are pretty much common sense solutions to being able to deter violence on a school. And we were told that those were not allowable expenses under the federal legislation because they had to be used for other things that weren't what you and I would know to be hardening of a perimeter. They did not want that. And so we had to work with our congressional delegation to get the U.S. Department of Education to actually alter their guidance to allow for that to happen. Well, if education is a state right and they push $20 million, for instance, into bipartisan safer communities in Louisiana, you know, local leaders, our state board of education, our administration, legislators can make decisions on, okay, how can we use this funding within the state of Louisiana to make kids and teachers safer and without the strings. And I think that's a positive. And I hope that we can get to that point. But time will tell.
When we look at how the money is doled out, I think how much of the state education budget is relies on federal funding?
Yeah, we use a pretty simple $2 billion with a B number, and it's a little south of that actually. But that is if you include the school breakfast and lunch program administered by the United States Department of Agriculture, your title funds, your special education funds, your early childhood funds, and various grant projects. We're just a little south of $2 billion that flows into Louisiana, birth through 12th grade.
Right. And what has been talked about by Secretary McMahon and others is that not necessarily an elimination of these dollars, but just the manner in which they're going to flow, right?
Yeah, that's right. And also programmatically. So one of the things that many people don't realize is that the United States Department of Education in many ways serves as a very large banking system, because they administer Pell and student loans and those services. Now, one could make an argument rather the public sector should be involved in student loans altogether. That should be a private market, endeavor. But right now there is, you know, a public component of student loans and obviously Pell. Well, that's housed at the U.S. Department of Education. It might make more sense for the Treasury Department, where you have finance individuals that could administer such programs. Likewise, if you're talking about...
They've actually recommended the Small Business Administration to do so.
That's right.
What the Trump administration is saying.
Right. And to me, that makes a lot of sense. And, Linda McMahon would know more about that than most anyone, because in Trump's first administration, in President Trump's first administration, she was the administrator of the Small Business Administration. So she understands how that would work. But there are No, there are various components and functions of the United States Department of Education that could be filtered to other agencies, and then you could block grant funds directly down to the states, and then federal laws just stay in place. And we want to make sure that we are in compliance with federal laws.
Yeah. The messaging that's going out about this is really kind of interesting, because if only about I forgot what percentage of their budget, I read it somewhere, of DOE's budget actually goes to local schools, right? Local school systems, not the entire amount of money that's budgeted for them. There's other programs.
True. And they have multiple offices in D.C. across, you know, across different parts of the city that are housing thousands of employees. And, you know, as I talk about pros and cons to this, one of the things I always suggest is if you no longer have that level of administration and bureaucracy, potentially you have the opposite of what the teachers union has expressed. And potentially you have the opportunity for those dollars that are funding some of that bureaucracy to flow into the classrooms at local levels.
And also, you know, it's interesting, I did not realize this, but part of the DOE's budget is determined by how many people are actually paying their student loans. And if that, if you got a little bit more aggressive relative to the collection of payment of student loans, you'd have more dollars available for K through 12 education, right?
Well, that's certainly something worth exploring. And as you know, Newell, over the last 4 years under the Biden administration, they have worked really hard. I don't think successfully, but they worked really hard to just universally forgive student loans, which, you know, they ran up against a problem there in the U.S. Supreme Court. But I know that moving forward, I'm not hearing any conversation from the Trump administration around loan forgiveness. And in fact, there's conversations around, you know, if someone takes out a loan, there's an expectation that they, you know, return and pay that loan back off. And that was not what we were hearing out of the Biden administration. We were hearing more around, you know, all of the loans that people have taken out. We're just going to forgive those. And personally, it's problematic because, you know, you have those loans aren't necessarily just forgiven. Someone has to pay for that. And so you have citizens across the entire state and across the country that may have not elected to go to college or may have self-financed their college, or they may have already paid off their loans and they just didn't feel as if it would be fair for them for what they have elected to do or have already paid, for them to just be paying for everyone else's loans. And so the Biden administration ran up into a problem with the Supreme Court there, and now those conversations have shifted completely, and the Trump administration is no longer pursuing those interests.
All right, we got to get to a break. We'll be right back. We're visiting with Dr. Cade Brumley, the Louisiana State Superintendent of Education. Stay with us. So when we were talking about civil rights, someone texted in, well, let me give you an example, a clear example, Ruby Bridges. Well, the fact of the matter was that the DOE wasn't even around at that point in time. That was executed by the Department of Justice, the civil rights section, which would still carry out the execution of any of these if some state, or an ignorant state, by the way, would try to prevent somebody from going to a public school. I don't know if you want to comment on that, Cade, but
I'm fine to comment on that. Look, I mean, I think it's a good question, a good point. It's around making sure that no one is being discriminatory, or no system is a discriminatory system, and those laws remain in place. And I think functions such as that could easily be provided at the U.S. Department of Justice. And you make a good point that the U.S. Department of Education only existed when it was created in the 70s by President Jimmy Carter. So civil rights movements, suffrage, all of those issues even were certainly predated the United States Department of Education.
Sure. And, you know, so I hear that a lot. I mean, I get that text all the time. It's like, Do your research. It wasn't around at that time, so they didn't really exercise that at all. They're always going to turn to the Department of Justice in that case. There are some folks that are saying that the administrative costs by you or a state organization are going to go up appreciably. I don't believe that to necessarily be true, and you tell me if I'm wrong, but my belief is you're handling the money now. Right. I mean, it's coming down.
Right.
From the,
yeah. I don't think that would
DOD,
be true. Either. I mean,
so
we're already. That's
you know,
right.
So, I mean,
we already have those systems in place.
Yeah. It's amazing how folks just try to make things up to make it seem like it's going to be much worse. It just can't operate as expressed by whether it's this administration or any other.
Right. And look, we are in conversations, Noel, with leadership at the U.S. Department of Education because they are, you know, they have a commitment to dismantling that agency. Now, whether they get to the point of a congressional action, I don't know, but I do believe they're going to make progress in shifting some of the work to other agencies and probably further empowering the states. And so they're asking the right questions of state leaders. How could this work? How could this function? What would be an appropriate flow for these funds? And so there's present engagement right now around how that might look.
Dr. Brumley, there's one thing that kind of struck me as odd. I was looking at a Pew report, and it had the 100 largest school systems listed and the share of their budget provided for by the federal government. Detroit, Michigan, almost half, 48.6%. And number two, Shelby County, which is Memphis, is at 28. How can you have such a differential, a 20% differential in federal funding of a local school system?
Well, that's a really good question. I haven't been able to see that particular report, but what I remain to believe to be true, and I know this sounds like a sound bite, and it's not necessarily intended to be so, but it's true for me. If education is a state's rights issue, you know, push those functions down to the states. Block grant money down to the states. Local citizens within a state elect their leaders, appoint their leaders, and they can be engaged in making good decisions around those dollars. The more local we can make this, the better off I think we'll be. And the more that parents can be engaged and involved, I think that's productive. What I've seen from the administration federally, from President Trump's administration, and I know even Governor Landry has been part of some of these press events, is, you know, around empowering the states, putting parents in driver's seats around school choice, and pushing for academic excellence. And so that certainly aligns to what we're trying to accomplish in Louisiana and have been successful over the last few years, but still have a long way to go.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. A really important issue. We appreciate your time, your insight. Have a great weekend.
Thank you, Noel.
Thank you, sir. We'll be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with us. Folks, when we return after the top of the hour news break, we'll visit with Rafael Goyeneche, president of the Metropolitan Crime Commission. We'll talk about solution rates. We'll talk about prosecutions as well. Stay with us.